This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Projections suggest that Republicans will take control of the U.S. House of Representatives as vote counting continues in U.S. midterm elections. A convoy of tankers comes under attack on the Iraqi-Syria border. Reports say that it was delivering Iranian fuel to Lebanon. And South Korea says the neighboring North has fired a ballistic missile off its east coast as tensions mount on the Korean Peninsula following joint Seoul-Washington drills. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumish Ahmadi, and these are our top stories of this hour. We will begin by the latest on the U.S. midterm elections. The future of Congress hangs in balance as it is still unclear whether Democrats will be able to keep their majority in both the Senate and the House. No party is currently holding the lead in the Senate. There are 100 seats up for grabs, and people are waiting on the fate of only four of them. In the U.S. House, the Republicans have been able to secure more seats than Democrats. Despite many votes having yet to come in, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy says it is clear that Republicans will take control of the House. There are 435 seats up for grabs in that chamber. A shift in power in Congress would make Democratic President Joe Biden a lame duck for his remaining 2 years in office. Our correspondent in Washington, D.C., Colin Campbell, joined us earlier for an update. He explained how Americans feel about the outcome of the elections.
So in Washington right now, a lot of people are anxious about the outcome of this election. You had a president who came in thinking that he had a mandate to build America better, fix infrastructure, deal with some of the racial inequities here, deal with some of the issues dealing with some of the more marginalized communities across the country. You also had to deal with the abortion issue, which became an issue during his presidency when the Supreme Court overturned the Roe versus Wade ruling, something that was established in the early 70s. So now you have people on the president's political side, Democrats, saying we have to show up at the polls. At the same time, though, historically, whatever party is in power usually suffers some type of losses during the midterm elections. This was supposed to be augmented, especially during Biden's time in office, because he's not a very popular president. He has a low approval rating. Congress has a low approval rating. So there was expected to be a lot of Republicans just wiping out Democrats. And therefore, it would be a huge loss for Biden and his political allies. What we're looking at, however, is a divided Congress if everything that is occurring now holds true when the final votes come in. This will make it extremely difficult for the president to pass any cogent policy alluding to anything that he had promised on the campaign trail.
Reports are coming out of the Iraqi-Syria border saying that two tankers carrying fuel have come under attack. At least four explosions were reportedly heard in the Al-Qa'im border crossing early on Wednesday. Iraqi media have quoted intelligence sources as saying that the tankers were carrying Iranian fuel to Lebanon, adding that the explosions left no casualties. Some local sources say that the attack was a drone strike. An Iraqi source speaking on condition of anonymity said that the attack had been carried out by the Israeli regime. To discuss that further, we're joined by Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, who is joining us live from Belfast. Mr. Hughes, in your opinion, what exactly does this attack signify?
Well, I think if the Israelis are behind this attack, then we should really put it in context. This is state-sponsored terrorism, and the Israeli regime is murdering Palestinians every day, unarmed civilians in the West Bank. It continues to bomb Gaza whenever it sees fit. It bombs Syria whenever it takes the notion. And there appears to be a continuation of the undeclared war against Iran to include the riots and the brutal murders of security officers in Iran by terrorists who are supported by Israel and Britain and America. So if we look at the attack itself on the tankers were going to Lebanon and to Beirut. Therefore, this is an attack on the sovereign state of Lebanon. But it's not only an attack on Lebanon, because what we're witnessing is a coalescence between Syria, Iraq, Iran, and Lebanon. So the Iranian people are trying to help the Lebanese people by sending fuel tankers through Iraq and through Syria to Lebanon to help alleviate the energy crisis that is currently taking hold in Lebanon. The financial structures and the economic structures in Lebanon are crumbling. The currency has devalued by up to 95%. There are shortages in medicine and in fuel. So what we have are Iranian people, Iraqi people, and Syrian people trying to help the people of Lebanon to get out of part of their crisis, which has been manipulated by the West through sanctions. And what we have is the pariah apartheid state of Israel trying to continue the destabilization of Lebanon by encouraging and increasing and enforcing the fuel energy crisis, which has helped lead to a breakdown in the government. And indeed, there is no functioning president or government in Lebanon at this time.
Thank you very much. That was Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, joining us live from Belfast. Former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton has talked about recent riots in Iran, saying, quote, protesters were armed with weapons smuggled from the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Bolton made the remarks in an interview with a BBC Persian TV channel. He characterized the rioters as opposition and said that he had seen images of some protesters being trained and armed in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Earlier, Iran's Border Guard Command announced the seizure of over 5,000 pieces of U.S.-made cold weapons at the borders. The commander of the Border Force, General Ahmad Ali Gudarzi, says over 600 firearms, including pistols and rifles, were also discovered and seized over the past 45 days. Protests erupted in Iran in mid-September after a young woman fainted at a police station and was pronounced dead in hospital days later. The protests were initially peaceful, but soon turned into riots and vandalism. Sayed Muhammad Marandi is a professor at the University of Tehran. He says terrorist groups themselves admit to have an active role in the recent riots in Iran.
They admit openly, or they claim, that they are active inside Iran. And they claim to be leading the riots. So there's no surprise when people are seen, photos are taken, footage is taken of people using knives, slitting police officers by the throat, shooting and killing other police officers and Besiege members, burning people alive, and then simultaneously being glorified in Western countries and in the Western media as freedom fighters, and Persian language media based in London calling their acts of murder, of burning people alive, of brutality against the police as legitimate. And if these media outlets were in English, Ofcom would, and they were directed towards an English audience or an English country or British English speaking country, Ofcom would shut these television stations down immediately and put these people on trial.
Israeli forces carry out a new attack in the occupied West Bank, killing one more Palestinian man in the city of Nablus. Israeli forces shot dead 18-year-old Mahdi Mohammad Hasha during an early morning raid in Barata camp. Three other Palestinians were also seriously injured and taken to hospital. Israel has recently tightened its deadly grip on the occupied West Bank and widened its crackdown on Palestinians there. More than 140 people have lost their lives in the West Bank this year alone. Palestinians have repeatedly called on the international community to help end the Israeli blitz in the occupied territories. Our correspondent Mona Kandel joined us earlier to tell us what exactly happened in Nablus.
About over 50 Palestinians suffered suffocation due to inhaling tear gas, according to Palestinian paramedics. What happened is that Israeli settlers and Israeli Knesset members raided the Joseph Tomb in Nablus. It's adjacent to Balata refugee camp. And their Palestinian fighters opened fire at the convoy, according to the Israeli military, and attacked those settlers who were raiding the Joseph Tomb. Immediately, the Israeli forces who were accompanying the settlers and the Israeli Knesset members from the Likud party raided Balata refugee camp, raided several areas also around the Joseph Tomb, and killed this Palestinian young man, wounded the three others, and carried out arrests among the Palestinians. Today, in the occupied West Bank, over 15 Palestinians were detained by the Israeli soldiers. According to a statement by the Israeli military, those who were detained are accused for wanted security reasons, are members of the different Palestinian resistance groups, and had been taking in different forms of resistance against the Israeli settlers and the Israeli forces.
North Korea has once again test fired a ballistic missile amid heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula. South Korea's military says the North fired the missile off its east coast. Japan's Coast Guard has also confirmed the launch. Over the past several days, North Korea has fired a barrage of missiles in response to the largest ever war games by Washington and Seoul. Pyongyang considers the military exercises as a rehearsal for an invasion. Washington and Seoul, however, say that they are holding the drills because the North is about to resume testing of nuclear bombs for the first time since 2017. Our correspondent in Seoul, Frank Smith, says Pyongyang is sending a message to the U.S. and South Korea that it will continue developing missile capabilities.
Now you have a new president here, Yoon Suk-yeol, and he's hard line with North Korea over its missile testing, which it really sort of ramped up this year with something like 30-odd tests just in the past week, last week, and then from the beginning of the year, 50 tests. Yoon Suk-yeol just came to power here in the South in May, and so I think this is partly a message to the Yoon Suk-yeol administration from North Korea that it's going to continue with its missile and nuclear development, and also a message to the United States. It's kind of doing like strategic patience 2.0. That was the Obama policy of really kind of ignoring North Korea. What we saw during that period was a lot of missile testing and some nuclear testing, and seeing North Korea really develop its capabilities here. At the same time, here in South Korea, with the South Korea-U.S. alliance, President Yoon Suk-yeol has wanted to strengthen that alliance, and that's what you see with these recent drills. Drills that began in late August that were land-based drills for the first time in 5 years, the largest in 5 years, and then with the recent Air Force drills, the so-called Vigilant Storm drills that took place and ended Saturday.
And Britain strikes are planned to be held in November amid an unprecedented rise in inflation and nationwide economic crisis. A strike by the London Underground workers is set to go ahead on Thursday. Millions of passengers will face disruption in transportation. That after authorities failed to resolve a contract dispute with workers. Officials have cautioned passengers that limited or no service will be expected on Thursday. The workers are demanding pay rise to help soften the blow of inflation that has already gone up to double-digit levels. Meanwhile, more than 70,000 university staff at 150 universities across the country will strike for 3 days over pay, working conditions, and pensions. Their strike is set to take place on the 24th and 25th and 30th of November. The Eurozone finance ministers meet in Brussels to exchange views on the EU's worsening energy crisis. Governments in the bloc have so far failed to mitigate the economic costs associated with cutting off Russia's cheap gas supplies. Jerome Hughes reports.
It is blatantly obvious that Brussels is losing its energy war with Moscow as prices across the 19-country eurozone continue to skyrocket. Washington is benefiting by selling gas to the EU at a high price. Eurozone finance ministers met on Monday to assess the crisis.
We are focusing now also within the European Commission, within the General Council, how we can, and then also with the ministers of energy that are focusing on how we can reduce that cost in the near future.
The poorest are feeling the pain most. Eye-watering amounts have been spent to try and compensate.
Euro area governments have so far collectively spent about 1.25% on energy supports for the year, so about 200 billion euro.
Of course, it's all linked to the EU's attempts to isolate Russia over the war in Ukraine. It's costing EU taxpayers billions of euro to house Ukrainian refugees, supply weapons to the Ukrainian army, and fund the government in Kiev. Ordinary workers will have to pay for it, but the eurozone economy is beginning to flatline.
Inflation continues to be high, even surprisingly high for both Europe and the United States. Sentiment indicators are very low, indicating a risk of recession.
It appears the European Union is now in damage control mode.
I am telling that we can work, should work, to avoid that this is a prolonged period of recession.
Peace activists are calling on the EU to mediate between Russia and Ukraine, but those calls appear to be falling on deaf ears. Many people are now nervously wondering, is there an unemployment catastrophe looming in the eurozone? Whether they are being overly pessimistic or merely realistic, there's no doubt a growing number of economists are suggesting the eurozone is heading for a deep, prolonged recession. Jerome Hughes at the Council of the EU. Brussels.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Wherever you go, you are surrounded by real estate, whether they are houses, offices, shops, hotels, or education, or even healthcare facilities. These buildings are all the products of Realty Development. Property is a multi-business. It can involve buying land and building on it, renovating or improving, or converting property from one use to another. All of which adds higher value to the area. Property developers quite literally build the world around us, creating and changing the environments we inhabit and use on our daily basis.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will take a look at Iran's housing and light construction industry. We want to uncover how this market is doing and what contributions it is making to living standards along with the economy. Time to light up today's Bazaar.
In order to become more familiar with the activities of light construction in Iran, we decided to visit a real estate developer in the capital city, Tehran. Nexa Group was established over a decade ago and is a known name in the construction industry. Essentially, it develops luxury properties for residential purposes. In a nutshell, a developer adds value to land or property. What sets this company apart from other developers is its choice of cream-of-the-crop architects who are highly creative, innovative, and experienced in the field of design. Clients who have land they wish to develop can seek the services of this contractor. This company then enters a contract with the owner and begins the process of vetting architects for designing its buildings. In recent years, several competitions have been held by this developer for residential projects. The winning design that meets the high standards of this company and its clients is awarded the project. But that's not all. This company also has a vast network of highly specialized subcontractors to take care of other aspects of construction, such as structure engineering, excavators, and so on. Among its many activities, this developer provides building management services. Such services include maintenance of plumbing, electrical, and mechanical installations of the building.
There are several different types of property development. Some are large scale, meaning that several lots of land are being developed into a single plot. These types of developments can be subdivided and sold individually or as a whole. There are also developments for commercial and sports uses, such as shopping centers and stadiums. Ooh, I like the sound of this.
Projects at this company range from low to medium density residential buildings. This developer also pays particular attention to designing buildings that are environmentally friendly. Most of its buildings are constructed following green practices that also elevate the living standards and quality of experience of its end users. One of its most recent residential projects is called Phoenix. What is most unique about this building is that it was designed based on the traditional 9-square method of Iranian architecture. This green building incorporates the needs of people during the coronavirus pandemic, which includes spaces for working from home. Large investments are made in real estate development each day. But adding value to the property, such as luxury structures with numerous amenities, are what really drive profits. And this company is ready to work with foreign investors and export its services along these lines. One of the competitive advantages of this developer, relative to others in the country, are its innovative and exceptional designs that gain the attention of clients and customers. Its luxury developments are geared to entice customers with more accommodations, higher-end options that integrate an entire lifestyle, and an elevated culture of living. The quality of its work has increased competition in the domestic market, making its buildings a must-have among customers. This property developer also has a unique view of the US-imposed sanctions, which has helped the company thrive throughout the years.
Iran has a growing population of around 85 million people, and the majority of the population is still young. But as time goes by, this population will age as they start families. With this in mind, many of them are embarking on the journey of purchasing homes. And for this to become possible, more housing units need to be constructed to meet this growing need.
The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development estimates that the per capita of housing for each Iranian is around 200 square meters. This means that 17 billion square meters of buildable land is needed to house every Iranian. According to the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the annual demand for homes stands at 900,000 units. In more general terms, according to the Ministry of Housing, some 10 million units are currently needed. This is while the average annual production volume for homes is around 300,000 units. So around 1 million residential units need to be built each year to satisfy this demand. Figures from the Statistics Center of Iran show construction of housing increased by nearly 40% last year. Data from the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development show municipalities issue an average of 350,000 residential construction permits each year.
Of this amount, roughly 70% lead to construction. However, experts say this is not nearly enough to meet annual housing demands. Last year, the housing construction market saw a slump in completing projects. This was mainly due to the jump in land prices and construction materials that deepened the housing recession. The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development says housing prices have increased by 200% over the last 5 years. This has increased the purchase parity, making some vulnerable groups unable to buy a home.
It might be interesting to know that this issue has gathered the attention of the government for some time now. The government has implemented initiatives to help people purchase homes. One of these initiatives was to increase the amount of bank loans for first home buyers. Several other plans are also underway, such as the vacant house tax plan, to increase the amount of available homes.
President Ibrahim Raisi has pledged to build 1 million residential units each year for the next 4 years. This scheme was presented to address and prevent a housing shortage in the country. The Building Contractors Association says planning, execution, and building material is available. It emphasized that with large investments and land allocation, this plan can easily go forward. But authorities contend that infrastructure such as electricity and water connectivity requires more planning. Government officials also say wrinkles in the financial model for this project still need to be ironed out. Iran is entirely self-sufficient when it comes to construction material, according to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. Steel, glass, and cement is produced in abundance in the country. In fact, the surplus of these items are exported to several countries around the world. Meanwhile, the light construction industry in Iran is booming amid a long housing recession. New spaces and innovative designs that incorporate the needs of people are being built. Homes are not just a place to live, they are increasingly being seen as a source of capital and a place to increase the quality of living standards. There is also a growing trend towards designing sustainable buildings that reduce emissions and negative environmental impacts. All these achievements make this industry a promising one with a bright future.
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit,
and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
...2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit.
Now it's that time of the show for me to step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague has another awesome field report lined up for you. Take it away.
The basis of the steel industry is iron ore. It's courtesy of this critical raw material that steel is all around us. In the beneficiation process, the gank minerals, or the mineral matter of no value that occurs with the metallic ore, is removed from the mineral substance and iron ore concentrate is produced. The concentrate is then shipped from mining plants as a bulk commodity by rail.
Hi again. The wagons carrying the iron ore concentrate have reached their destination. What happens at this stage is that through a gargantuan machine, they are overturned. This is called a wagon tippler. What it does is that it tips the wagons. Look, it retains the wagons from the top and it overturns them. First, the wagons are detached from other wagons and then they're lifted over here. And look at those arms. Look at those arms, how gigantic they are. And now they're going to retain the wagon, overturn it to empty its load into a container. From that container, the iron ore concentrate is going to be mixed. First, it's going to travel through some distance and it's going to be mixed with some additives to be fed into the pelletizing process.
In this week's feature program, we visited Chorumalu Industrial Facility, located in the center of Iran, Yazd province. The iron ore concentrate must be pelletized for use in iron and steel making. In summary, pelletizing is achieved by combining the iron ore with water and a specific binder, which is then rolled up in a balling drum to produce relatively uniform pellets, which can then be easily handled in downstream processes.
And here we are. The powder is the iron ore concentrate now mixed with some additive. It is now fed into large discs. In this industrial complex, everything is just enormous. This is called the pelleting disc. It's really huge. Now what happens here is through the use of centrifugal force, the powder gets compressed and it's just pushed to the edges of this disc. And after the powder completes a couple rotation, and as it grows in size, then it forms the pellets. And once it is just large enough, it will exit the rotation because of that centrifugal force and it moves over to the conveyor belt and it's now time for grading. Now, those particles that are just perfect in size and shape, they will move on to travel over to the kiln where the content moisture is removed and sintering takes place. So the iron pellet now gets hardened and after that, cooling takes place. Now, stay with us for more.
Chorumalu's pelletizing plant, with a production capacity of 3.4 million tons per year, employs 500 people directly and another 3,000 indirectly. The iron ore pellets will be transferred to stackers and are piled in an area which can store 300,000 tons of pellets.
Fe2O3, I don't know how familiar you are with chemistry and the chemical reactions and the periodic table, but anyway, at this stage of the process, Fe2O3 is going to be turned into Fe through a process that is called direct reduction of iron. And this process is done by three main stages. The first stage occurs above furnace. The pellets are poured into the furnace. And what happens inside the furnace is two gases are going to hit the pellets. The gases are carbon monoxide and molecular hydrogen. They're extracted from natural gas through a process that is called reformation. And two gases are going to hit the pellets, and through three chemical reactions, Fe2O3 is going to turn into Fe, which is called the reduced iron, or also sponge iron because of its high porosity. Now, this process can be done in two different ways. One is called hot direct reduction of iron, and the other one is called cold direct reduction of iron. Now, I'm going to move on to the next and the final stage, steel production.
Hot direct reduced iron, or HDRI, is DRI that is transported hot directly from the reduction furnace into an electric arc furnace, thereby saving energy. Whereas cold DRI is the one that is cooled and stored before being charged to a furnace. Well, on the face of it, there's no reason for facilities to even consider cold DRI, but in reality, it's not really that simple. The development of mankind would have been impossible but for steel. It fueled the Industrial Revolution and remains the backbone of modern industrialized economies. The process continues with primary steelmaking, which is done via electric arc furnace at Chorumalu, and then moves on to secondary steelmaking, which involves treating, continuous casting, and shaping.
The final product is made, the steel billet, and you can tell how hot it is in here. Well, the process here starts with the electric arc furnace. It melts the sponge iron that I talked about earlier. And what happens next is that we need some ladles. Ladles are containers. They're going to contain the molten material. Then the ladles are taken over some molds. Molds are going to carry the molten material. And as the molten material is carried over some distance, it solidifies into the final product, which is the steel billet. Now, this complex is really huge. Everything inside it is gigantic. And I've been with you from the very beginning of this process, the iron concentrate, to the very end.
Thanks for that educational adventure once again. We are almost out of time, but before we go, let's take a look at some news and trends in the housing and light construction industry. Three-dimensional printing has been around since the early 1980s, but it is now gathering steam. And a group of Iranian engineers have developed a massive 3D printer that can print entire buildings. Goodness me.
This giant printer moves on rails and deploys cement. The cement is stacked up layer by layer in coils by the printer to build the structure. The method is cost-effective as it combines several processes into a single step and can print a house in 48 hours. Other advantages of this machine are that it can print a variety of customized structures. The printer is used to make small-scale homes, and only a handful of companies around the world offer this technology.
Electricity is at our fingertips all the time, but what if a building could be powered by the energy of our movement? Well, a new technology is emerging that converts kinetic energy into electricity to help supply power to buildings. Human energy itself, genius.
This technology is a type of electromagnetic flooring which harnesses kinetic energy from footsteps to produce clean electricity. The tiles feed energy to a battery for later use. Excess energy can also return to the electrical grid. The energy can be easily produced from gyms and other areas with high activity and movement, such as busy sidewalks. The technology was first developed by a European company and was recently installed in a Brazilian football stadium to power lights around the field.
And finally, there is a growing trend towards prefabrication of homes. The process is typically called modular construction, which is famous for being environmentally friendly. It's good to be green.
In this method of construction, parts of the building are created at an off-site location. Walls, roofs, and other parts of the structure are manufactured and partially assembled. These components are then transported to the building site and assembled on location. Typically, these are small structures that can be disassembled and moved to different places when desired. There are several companies in Iran that specialize in this type of construction. Their products range from small suites that can be used for camping to entire homes.
Brilliant stuff. Well, that covers our show for today. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'in rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. Another key of life is that we need to prevent diseases to our body. The Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they explained to us there are many things that can cause a person to become sick, whether it is food, sleeping in the bathroom, drinking cold water in the bathroom, or not covering your head after a shower, or even walking out of the shower without pouring cold water on your feet. And they go on and on about these things, or even cutting your nails during Friday, not having a shower during Friday. And you can see all these things being highlighted by the infallibles, alayhim as-salam. When it comes to the causes of diseases, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they tell us there are materialistic matters that cause me to be sick. And these are the ones we want to look at today. For example, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam talks to Amir al-Mu'mineen and he says to him the following: Ya Ali, tis'atu ashya'in turith an-nisyan. 9 things that causes a person to forget. So obviously we are talking about the health of the body and what causes dementia here, which is to forget. He says, aklu tufah al-ham, eating sour apples. Now, we love apples, but the sour ones, they cause a person to become more forgetful. And he says, وَجِبْن, and also cheese. وَقِرَاءَةِ كِتَابَةِ الْقُبُورِ, and to go to the graveyards and read what's written on them. وَالْمَشُّ بَيْنَ إِمْرَأَتَيْنِ, and to walk between 2 women if you're a man. وَطَرْحِ الْقَمْلَةِ, and obviously when it comes to the hair lace. وَالْحَجَامَةِ فِي النَّقْرَةِ وَالْبَوْلِ فِي الْمَاءِ الرَّاكِدِ, and doing hijama at the time that it's not meant to be for it, or a person urinating in a place that has water, that is still water. Now, I just mentioned a few of the list. And these are things that if we look at them materialistically from the outside, we say, well, what is the link between me as a male, for example, walking between 2 females that causes me forgetfulness? What is the relationship between sour apples, eating cheese, and being forgetful? So obviously, because we have not received the information and the reasons to why, we can't deny it. Now, medical science, to some extent, they might be able to explain the relationship between apples and the brain and memory, but there are a lot of things that they can't explain. So when it comes to these things, we can say that we have to be more careful and return back to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and see what they say to us. So this is one cause when we talk about dementia. When we talk about leprosy, when a person has that disease in the faces, also the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they say there are certain things that if you do, it will cause you to be leprous and you will have that disease on your face and on your skin. Now, I will mention some of them, but first, let us take a quick break.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in 2 volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
Imam
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. When it comes to leprosy, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam says five things will cause a person to be leprous. One, an-nuratu yawm al-jum'ah, for one to remove all the hair from his body on a Friday. Wa yawm al-arbi'a, and on Wednesday. Wa at-tawaddu'u wal-ikhtisal bil-ma' alladhi taskhanahu ash-shams, to do wudu or ghusl, shower, in the water that was left outside and became warm by the sun. وَالْأَكْلُ عَلَى الْجَنَابَ, to eat while a person on the state of janaba, which is extremely makruh in Islam. You are recommended to go wash your hands if you are on the state of janaba and have not had a shower yet, or haven't had the time to have a shower. Make sure you wash your hands before you eat. And obviously, if one eats in that state of janaba, he says, you will cause yourself or put yourself, or you'll be more likely to get that disease, which is leprosy. وَغَشَيَانُ الْمَرْأَةِ فِي أَيَّامِ حَيْضِهَا, and for a person to come in contact with his spouse while she's on her menstrual cycle. وَالْأَكْلُ عَلَى الشَّبَى, and to eat while you are full. So this is just five things the Prophet says that when people do them, they become leprous. So if one has leprosy, if he sits with himself and he sees what he has been doing, he'll find that he's been doing at least one or more of these things. The Prophet ﷺ also says, when you drink water, because we drink water every day, obviously, he says, مُصُّ الْمَاءَ مَصَّى وَلَا تَعْبُّهُ عَبَّى. When it comes to water, try to suck the water and not just to pour it down your throat. فَإِنَّهُ يُوجُدُ مِنْهُ الْأَكْبَادِ, for the lungs and the liver and the intestines, he says they get harmed by it. So when you suck the water, you kind of take it slowly in. When you pour it, it just falls all at once. The Prophet also says, إِيَّاكُمْ مَجْلُوسِ فِي الشَّمْسِ, I warn you, and to sit outside in the sun. فَأَنَّهَا تُبْلِي ثَوْبِ, for it makes your clothes old. وَتُنْتُنِ الرِّيحِ, and it makes you smelly. Obviously, because once a person sits in the sun, he gets sweaty, and there comes smell. وَتُظْهُرُ الدَّاءَ الدَّفِينِ, and it brings that sickness which is buried down in the body. And medically today, they tell us there are so many harmful things in the sun. Now, I do understand that you need your vitamin D, so make sure you have sunscreen on, or at least sit in the shade. So to get vitamin D, you don't have to be directly under the sunlight. And today, with global warming, the sun is not what it used to be. It's very upset with us because we have played and tampered with the settings of God's environment. Therefore, we need to take extra care of ourselves these days. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi says, to that extent, you do certain acts and then you become sick. So you need to make sure that you avoid diseases and sicknesses when it comes to yourself. And keeping yourself healthy and fit is in fact a duty upon each one of us. It's not a recommendation. That body that we have is an amana, is a trust. It is not mine, so I can't do whatever I feel like. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking. walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.